I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to be talking about creative ways to soothe and satisfy the spirit of the soldier and bring some peace to the warrior's heart. We're going to talk about art therapy for veterans. My guests will be Julia Whitehead of the Vonnegut Library, veteran Aaron Toole, and Benjamin Patton, an author and filmmaker who also is the grandson of General George Patton. And, of course, you. Please join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or finding us on Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about art therapy for veterans. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I've got an eclectic group of guests today. I'll start by introducing Julia Whitehead, who is with the Vonnegut Library. She's here in the studio with us. Julia, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It is good to have you here. Thank you very much for joining us. And joining me by phone is Aaron Toole, who is a veteran. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Hello, thanks so much.
Oh, certainly. It's good to have you here as well. And also joining us by phone is Benjamin Patton, who is an author and a filmmaker, and also happens to be the grandson of General George Patton. Benjamin, welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here, John.
It's good to have you here. Well, Julia, let's talk a little bit about the whole idea of art therapy for veterans and maybe some opportunities that they might have to indulge.
Sure. So one thing that we're trying to do with an event on Saturday at our Vonnegut Fest, the event is actually at the Heron School of Art, the Basile Auditorium. We'll also have a resource fair for veterans and a number of organizations, arts organizations as well as veterans organizations, will be set up to share information about the resources their facilities offer to veterans to reach out to the arts as therapy. And we talk about the arts, we mean, you know, everything involved with the humanities and arts. So it's you know, painting, it's music, it's writing, poetry, you know, fiction, nonfiction. Everything that falls under that creative outlet is included.
And if people want to attend, how do they find out about it?
Sure. Go to VonnegutLibrary.org. We have the event schedule for that day. We actually have award-winning writer Tim O'Brien, Vietnam veteran Tim O'Brien, and Benjamin Patton, who I have met earlier this year, will be coming out to take part in our events on Saturday, and he will be at the Vonnegut Library as well from noon to 1:30. And then everyone moves over to Heron at 2 for this panel discussion with Steve Inskeep, your very own Steve Inskeep, and a number of other veterans who will be sharing their stories of how they used the arts and humanities to heal from their war trauma.
Benjamin, I think that was a cue for you. What are you going to be doing
like
while you're out here?
Event. I think I'm definitely going to go.
Okay. So what is bringing you out to Indianapolis? What will you be doing in connection with the event?
Well, I guess I have a couple of pieces. I mean, obviously, last year I wrote a book called Growing Up Patton, which is about the two generals, Patton. One is my famous grandfather, but the other one, who's really the primary character in the book, is my father, who himself was a retired major general, passed away a decade ago, but saw a lot of action and had a lot of wisdom to pass down. So that part of it is really a reflection on the wisdom that I learned from my father over the years that he picked up from his father and was passed down. That's half of it. The other thing I'm focused on is an initiative that I started a couple of years ago called the I Was There Film Workshops, and basically it relates more directly to, I guess, the theme of our program, which is art therapy. And it's a program that we're doing in support of veterans and military families with coping with post-traumatic stress.
And Aaron, you also are an artist as well. Could you talk a little bit about your art?
I just make cups. I got out of the Marine Corps and I had the GI Bill, so I went to school with the idea that I'd go to school, find something I like to do, because I like to do it, I'll do it well, because I do it well, someone will pay me. I kind of fell into ceramics, and then, I didn't think about it as therapy, but, after the Marine Corps, I wanted to do something that I believed in, that I thought was worthwhile, and making art, like art, education, science, medicine, things seem like things above just crass commercial, interest, that's something a little higher and nobler. And so, but, I'd never thought about it as art and therapy, but now I realize I've made and given away about 14,000 something cups since 2001. So there might be some therapy thing in there.
We are talking about art therapy for veterans today on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Benjamin, I want to talk a little bit about your book and really the whole idea of growing up Patton. I suppose there might be a couple of other names in American society and history that would carry a greater burden of expectation than yours, but not that many. How difficult was that, and what was the sense of expectation of being a Patton?
Well, I think that's a question I'm often asked, needless to say, but and it's a good question. I would say that there was pressure, as I reflect on it now, and having of course written the book, that the pressure really was more from history than any individual person. I think I came to realize that as I wrote the book and primarily focusing on my father. But I would say, one has to compare. I'd say much more significant was the pressure that my father faced, not necessarily from his dad, but again from history. You have to keep in mind that during the war years, my father, who was at West Point during almost the entirety of World War II, only saw his father, sort of at the height of his adolescence, only saw his father twice, just before he went off to North Africa for Operation Torch in the fall of 1942, and just after the war when he came back for ticker tape parades in the summer of 1945. And then 6 months later, my grandfather was mortally injured in a freak car accident. And then 6 months after that, in the summer of 1946, my father went to graduation, obviously well known by then because of his name and his lineage, and some old veteran came up to him at the at graduation and said, "You'll never be the man your father was, but congratulations anyway." And I looked to that. I look at that, and then I imagine my father having 34 years of service immediately following that, having served in combat more frontline time than his father, and just as highly decorated with two Distinguished Service Crosses and two Silver Stars and a Purple Heart, which all just come just below the Medal of Honor, the DSC. And I'm pretty impressed. And so really, he's a titan in my eyes for the pressure that he withstood, and anything that I, as the third generation of this lineage, have to face is minuscule in comparison.
I'm probably pulling us off topic, but I'm fascinated here. How did he deal with that? I mean, to some degree, I was getting echoes here of Robert Todd Lincoln, who was Secretary of State and had a career that was incredibly distinguished by any other standards, but to some degree seemed to feel that he didn't quite measure up because he hadn't saved the Union during the course of his lifetime. How did your father deal with that?
I think, well, my father really, and this is the part of this, my standard answer is go buy the book, but of course I'm very happy to get you a copy. I know someone who has a connection. But but really, I think he really focused on, I think this is what he willed himself to do, is just to be himself. A lot of the advice that I've gleaned from him over the years that as a younger person I didn't pay much attention to, like a lot of teenagers and adolescents and think they know everything. But a lot of it revolved around that idea. He used to say, he used to quote, in our family we quoted from whatever worked, if it was the Bible or if it was Caesar or anything in between. But one of the most my favorite quotes of his from his speeches was something from Ecclesiastes, where he said, "Whatsoever your hand findeth itself to do, do it with thy might." And I think my father was very, very good at living in the present and just cutting out the noise around him to just keep his eye on the ball and move forward. And he used to also tell me, "Be yourself. If you're not yourself, you're nobody." And I think this is part of the mantra that he had to repeat to himself often to just sort of withstand that pressure that just creeps in around you when you have somebody who even today is famous almost out of proportion to his contributions. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but I mean he wasn't Eisenhower and he wasn't MacArthur in terms of his seniority, but he just caught, he just was at the right place at the right time and stayed with us throughout history.
Well, and there was the other thing is that there was a much better movie made.
Well, about that too. Everyone thought that I was George C. Scott's grandson when I was a kid.
Yeah. In terms of this, I remember, and Julia, I'm going to bring this back to you. The connection, really, of therapy of soothing the spirit. I remember, and I should say, Kurt Vonnegut and I were friends for the last 7 or 8 years of his life. We'd get together in New York and have either lunch at the Italian restaurant just up the street from his place or dinner at the French restaurant. And I remember him saying once that the only reason anyone should ever do any kind of art is because it feeds your soul.
Yes.
So what is the sense of connection here for these events? What's the animating principle?
Well, okay, so, for Vonnegut, I'm not sure how much our listeners know about Vonnegut, but he was held, he was taken by the Nazis during the Battle of the Bulge, marched 60 miles through snow to a train where he was hauled off to Dresden, Germany. He worked during the days as at a factory for vitamins for pregnant women. And at night he was down underground in Slaughterhouse 5. And he was there during the firebombing of Dresden by the Allies. And it's estimated that, anywhere from 25,000 to 135,000 people were killed during the firebombing of Dresden. And Vonnegut was tasked with burying these victims of the firebombing. And, many of these people were children and women and pets and elderly. And so, he came back to Indianapolis. There wasn't a mention of the firebombing of Dresden in the newspaper archives. So he wrote Slaughterhouse 5. That was a cathartic experience for him, but it did take him 20 years to write that book. And he subtitled that book, The Children's Crusade. And I think it's really important to think about that Children's Crusade. He, went on to talk about the need for diplomatic solutions to war. But I want to mention to Aaron Toole, who's on the line, I want to mention to Aaron something I had not shared with him last year when he came to create art on site for us for our Veterans Reclaim Armistice Day event we had last year in November. But I had another young veteran, a Iraq War veteran, come up to me, and he said, thank you for bringing Aaron Toole to me, because I learned about his story, but I realized how much we had in common and, how people treat people when they're, suffering from a psychological injury from war. And it just was really meaningful for me to see the connections that people made that day. And we're hoping that in addition to, the program we're putting on, that people will go to the Heron School of Art on Saturday and talk and, share information, maybe sign up for one of the programs and, our local community offers. We're also trying to get this online so that others can see this program from our website, and we're busily working to make that happen, so hopefully we can do that.
And you mentioned something that part of the point of this is to allow veterans to reclaim Armistice Day. Why is that important, Julia?
I've been working with the Jim Brown, the head of the Indiana Department of Veterans Affairs, and others, and they say, Jim Brown has told me, he was the sergeant major of the Indiana National Guard, and he said that he gets calls for, you know, people who are wanting, soldiers who are wanting to commit suicide, and they're not finding answers with some of them are able to be cured with or not necessarily cured, but helped with medications or, you know, different types of laser therapy or other types of therapies. But, you know, many people are not being helped as much as they can by just those methods. And so art is a way to really express yourself and to share with others. Benjamin Patton's program is really interesting because, you know, he, as part of the Patton Veterans Project, he creates film or teaches veterans how to create films.
We will talk more about that after the break. We are talking about art therapy for veterans. My guests are Julia Whitehead, Aaron Toole, and Benjamin Patton. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about art therapy for veterans. My guests are Julia Whitehead of the Vonnegut Library, Aaron Toole, who is a veteran and an artist, and Benjamin Patton, author and filmmaker, and also the grandson of General George Patton. Paul, welcome to the program. Paul, welcome to the program. Hello?
My name is Paul. How are you?
I'm fine. What's on your mind, Paul?
Well, thank you. I'm surprised it came so quickly. originally been involved, well, I'm a veteran. My wife is a veteran. We work with veterans. We've opened a veterans store at 46th and the Mornon Trail for veteran artists. But the other part is with Julia Whitehead and the people at Heron School of Art. We are putting together art exhibitions that are made by veterans, and they're pretty darn powerful. Now, one is called Combat Paper, in which uniforms have been turned into paper for mediums for poetry, for watercolor, for oil, and so forth. And the one we're working on now is called Vet Ink, which I think is also really close to the art therapy kind of thing. It's veterans' tattoos that tell stories of their issues. So it's photographs and stories, and we hope come together with Julia and with Juliet at Heron School of Art into an exhibition in the next year or so. And it's pretty exciting.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Paul, and we will look forward to seeing that when it happens. Thank you very much. Aaron, I'd like to ask you a little bit. You'd mentioned in the first segment that you had been a Marine, and then you came back, and you started working with ceramics. When did you go into the Marines? How old were you?
1989.
1989?
91 Gulf War.
Okay. And you got out, you said, I think you said in 2001?
94.
Oh, in 94. I must have heard 2001 someplace else then.
2001 was, I started making cups and giving them away in 2001.
What drew you to...
Sorry.
What drew you to doing the cops?
Well, I mean, I got out of the Marine Corps. And I wanted to talk about my experiences in the military, but I couldn't really find a way. You know, big paintings seemed like too much. I think for me, the only, you know, peace is the only adequate war memorial, and you know, the cup seems the appropriate scale to me to talk about war. You know, like Stalin said, one death is a tragedy, a million is a statistic. A million deaths is an incalculable tragedy, and so the cups, you know, it's just that right scale, that hand to hand, and at the best case, like Julia was saying with that the vet in Indiana, you know, the best when the cups are the best, it's just a touchstone, you know, for a vet. You know, I think a lot of what happens in war is kind of inexpressible. You can't really talk about it to your family or friends, you know, people you really love, but the cups sometimes can be that touchstone where, you know, a father can have a conversation with her daughter or something. And I think, like, the stuff that Benjamin's doing with his I Was There film thing, you know, it's just a touchstone, some place where they can try to express things that are kind of inexpressible.
Well, could I ask you to if you can, since we're working in an auditory rather than a visual medium, could you paint a word picture of what one of your cups looks like?
I only decorate the cups. I'll use like military insignia. I'll make molds of somebody's medals. Say, if they let me borrow their medals, I'll make a mold of them and then decorate the cups with the medals that that individual rates. And then, you know, if they have pictures, I can make decals and fire pictures of their image, you know, in uniform or whatever, onto the cup and then give them the cup. So it's just, you know, they just decorate. And then, too, like, you know, like the gas mask that I wore in the 91 Gulf War has been translated into a toy for children ages 6 and up. You know, I thought the air was poisonous, and I'm a little claustrophobic. It was really kind of stressful wearing a gas mask. But, you know, then I come home, and I see, a toy for my son's age, you know, and I haven't even talked to him about my experience, and, you know, I don't know where to broach that subject. And then to see him playing with something that was so kind of traumatic for me has been really kind of surreal. But so put that on a cup, you know, as well.
It's interesting, Julia, I'm going to come back to you because I'm listening to Aaron talk, and is there something about the idea of fashioning into whatever medium or whatever art you are working with, creating a piece of art gives you the necessary distance or removal to be able to deal with the experience? Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, in the example of Kurt Vonnegut, Slaughterhouse Five's one of the earliest drafts is a letter that where he recounts many of the same experiences and had to be reworked over and over again into fiction, as it were. Is there something about that that creates a release or at least gives veterans the distance or sense of security that allows them to deal with what they see?
I think there are, you know, a few different things that go along with this. Part of it is the process of creating and the, you know, the time that's spent in choosing the right words to convey your experience and really get that message across. But another part of it is, you know, sharing it. Vonnegut initially shared it with his first wife, Jane Cox Vonnegut, and she was his editor, and she encouraged him and asked him questions. And, you know, the sharing it part is really important. And, you know, I want to go back to Aaron again. I received one of Aaron's cups, and he and I are I'm actually a former Marine myself, although not a war veteran. And receiving that cup, and I'm guessing that for him to give that cup, you know, we have a shared bond. Even though I didn't go to war, I still feel something for, you know, not just Marines, but, you know, people who serve and then family members of people who serve, because I, you know, I was exposed to a lot of that as well. And so I think that knowing that I think people have an idea that the people who serve in the military are, you know, bloodthirsty and this kind of thing. But, you know, my experience and I'm guessing many others is that, you know, you're encouraged to read. You know, we have the Commandant's reading list. And so, you know, people are reading Vonnegut and they're reading Tim O'Brien and others and connecting with those experiences, and to put those words down and to really share what you experience, there's really not much more powerful than that. I mean, on a single page, Kurt Vonnegut could make you laugh and cry at the same time on one page because of how powerful his words were. And, you know, it unites us as people. It helps educate, you know, others on what the experience is like. And I think it's really brave for veterans to share that experience. And I think that the more they're shared, you know, the less we'll have armed conflicts, because people just won't put up with it anymore. At least, you know, I'm sure there will be some, but still, you know, the public does have a voice, and veterans should express their voices.
We are talking about art therapy for veterans. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Benjamin, in terms of the other piece, the I Was There series, what do you try to do with those?
Well, let me answer that by picking up on what the other wonderful folks on the film have said. And first of all, Aaron using the cups, I can't wait to see them as an expression of things that you've experienced is very powerful. And certainly Kurt Vonnegut is a really an extraordinary writer. I think they're both artists, of course. What we're doing is we're doing the same kind of thing. There may be, I often say that, maybe a veteran coming back can't speak about something he experienced. Maybe he can't speak about it ever, but maybe, just maybe, he or she can make a film about it. And when you sort of combine the proven power of narrative in general, and to some extent even the cups are a narrative in themselves, you combine that with the power of digital media and the ability to shoot that out to so many people, you have kind of the essence of what we're doing. And it has one other piece, which I think is important, is that filmmaking is an inherently collaborative medium. It's very difficult to make a film by yourself. So other mediums can be collaborative, but you pretty much have to collaborate in order to make a film for the most part. And so those kind of things kind of spun together give us what we think is a very powerful way for a veteran to express themselves, and in a safe way, because in these different pursuits, you're the director, you're God in your film. You decide exactly what ends up on the timeline and what you're communicating in and what way. And I think that's an empowering thing and something of a release. And I look forward to sharing some examples of the work, actually, when I'm at the library this weekend.
We are talking about art therapy for veterans here on No Limits. This raises a question. I mean, to some degree, I think of, the therapeutic effect being the actual doing the work. I mean, in Aaron's case, the fashioning of the cups and all of that. But at least what I'm hearing is that a lot of it is also in the sharing of the story, sort of the aftermath of the art, I'm struggling for a metaphor here, but it is the sharing of the stories, creating vehicles by which the stories can be shared, that the therapeutic effect takes place. Is that, am I onto something there, Aaron, or am I completely off base?
Oh, for sure. I mean, and I think the cups are more fun when they're full of whiskey, but yeah, I mean, I think sharing
don't we all?
Sharing the stories together is definitely what it's about. And I think it's, we're talking about therapy, but it's also a lot of fun. It's actually, it's not therapy like sit down on the couch and spill your guts. You're just like, I had guys here in the studio and they were making ashtrays, just the worst stuff. Like, I hate that as a ceramics instructor. They were making ashtrays, but the conversation they were having, amongst combat vets, it wasn't that bad. But in a regular ceramics class, people would be cringing and crying in the corner. But it was, they were just doing. They had their mind on something else. This little ashtray and the conversation happened. And also, I'd like to say that I'd like to encourage older vets to come out. There's a lot of focus on the young guys, but a lot of the suicides are older guys. And I think, there was a suicide here on campus in. I got involved in a veterans group for the first time, student veterans group, to try to help them. But I didn't realize how helpful it would be to me, to talk to other guys who'd been through similar experiences and, see myself in them and vice versa. And, it's just a really good and fun and worthwhile. And anyway, sorry. That's it.
We have gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. It's a pretty simple question, and this one's for you, Benjamin. It is, when is Benjamin Patton coming to town?
Jeez, I guess Julia could give the specifics on that. But what's our timing this weekend, Julia? I'll be there. I know I'll be arriving on Friday. I'll be there for the entire event on Saturday.
Yes. So noon to 1:30 at the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library at 340 North Senate, three blocks north of
State House. Go ahead and give that to people again, because they might not be sitting, much as I would like to think they sit by the radio with pencils and paper in hand, just waiting for words of wisdom from this program.
So the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library is located at 340 North Senate Ave, and that's three blocks north of the State House downtown. And so Benjamin will be there along with Tim O'Brien from noon to 1:30. And I'll also mention we have an art exhibit at that time created by peacemakers from around the world, including Bono, the Dalai Lama, Bob Dylan, and others. And it was created for the Carter Center, the Jimmy Carter Center. And we will read a letter that President Carter is writing to the Vonnegut Library for this event on Saturday. So we'll have Benjamin there from noon to 1:30. And then we move over to Heron School of Art, Basile Auditorium, for the program to start at 2 and go until 3:30. But surrounding that, there will be that arts fair in the lobby where people can browse.
Is there a cost to attend these events?
No, and I am glad you asked that because all of the events during the day for Vonnegut Fest, we have events around the city, including at Indy Reads Books and Book Mamas in Irvington, Irvington Public Library, the Athenaeum. And then we do have a ticketed event in the evening at Indiana Landmarks called Timequake Clam Bake. That is a dinner and a comedy show by comedian Gary Goldman. And that is a ticketed event. And you can find details about that at VonnegutLibrary.org. But I need to thank Lily Endowment and Apparatus and Kelly Fletter, who is the CEO of Apparatus, is our honorary chair for this event and serves on the board of the Vonnegut Library. Chris Nan Stack, our board chair, Chris Stack, and Amazon Publishing, Indiana Humanities, and many other sponsors for this wonderful event. And this is why we're able to make these events, most of them at least, free to the public. We want to do that. The Vonnegut Library, there's no admission to the library. There's no admission or a fee for tours. You'll see when you look at our website that many of the programs we run throughout the year are free because we do want people to come.
And go ahead, but real quickly, give them the URL for the library
Vonnegut
website.
Yeah, www.vonnegutlibrary.org, or you're welcome to give me a call at 317-652-1954. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Benjamin, I'm going to ask a variation of the same question that I asked Aaron before we got the caller question about when you were coming to town, which is, in terms of the therapeutic value of doing the work, is it actually doing the work, or is it the sense of that connection with an audience?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I think, we're fairly early in the process of building out this program. We've been working on a handful of military bases, meeting the soldiers where they are, shall we say, the OEF, OIF, veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan that are being treated, extended outpatient care at major military bases. So I think what we've found there is that it's both. I mean, it's the process of collaborating with others, civilian filmmakers. A couple of my instructors are veterans, but most of them are civilians, collaborating with us, collaborating with other servicemen and women that are either retired or active duty that are being treated. And it's that process of collaboration that's kind of the secret sauce, but it's also at the end they walk out with a product that they can share and with their family, with their loved ones, with whomever their audience is. And the other part that's been significant is people are coming back for subsequent workshops. We're trying to do them on at least a quarterly basis at the bases we're working at. A quarterly basis at the bases we're working at. For instance, at Fort Carson and Fort Bragg right now. And soldiers will come back and say, I'd like to be a mentor and look over the shoulder of another veteran making a film because, I used to command a squad and now I don't have a squad anymore and I'm being med boarded out and this gives me an opportunity to help somebody else. And so I think there's therapy going on multiple levels, and then I would just quickly say that we're building the model at military bases, but ultimately, with the reduction in the armed forces, pretty significant. These men and women are moving out to civilian communities, and we're going to increasingly have to meet them where they are. And Aaron is correct in saying that while there are suicides, certainly more than one a day among veterans of the current wars, the vast majority of the nearly 1 an hour that are committing suicide are Vietnam veterans and older veterans.
We are talking about art therapy for veterans. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about art therapy for veterans. My guests are Julia Whitehead of the Vonnegut Library, Aaron Toole, who is a veteran and an artist, and Benjamin Patton, who is an author and filmmaker and the grandson of General George Patton. Benjamin, I want to ask a question. In some ways, we've dealt with this. What drew you, in terms of your art, what drew you to these themes of dealing with veterans? And, you know, was it because in some ways the military was the family business?
Oh, it certainly was the family business. I mean, I loved growing up on, you know, the half a dozen military bases that we traveled around to from year to year. I think I moved 11 times before I was 13. And it was a blast. I ended up choosing a different career, but certainly it's wonderful that that career took me into music and film, and then it circled back to the family business perhaps in another way, so that now I can kind of re-engage my own legacy by doing work that, while is in my skill set and interest, area of interest being media and film, certainly relates to that legacy in a positive way. I mean, I know people often remark that my father and grandfather were, particularly my grandfather, were quite famous for their rather violent reactions to what might be called post-traumatic stress, particularly in World War II with my grandfather. And now things have kind of circled back, and I get a chance to address that issue as a civilian in a new way and hopefully do some good.
How did, you know, when you were growing up in that, I know you said you enjoyed the military bases and all of that, but when you were viewing the military as an adolescent and, you know, thinking, when you really start thinking about what your life is going to be, what sort of lens did you look at it through?
Well, I looked at it through the lens that, hey, I feel like my grandfather and father aced the course in terms of the military. You know, they maxed the course already, and I decided that maybe I had enough of an ego that I wanted to try something different. But also, the times had changed, and I just felt, as much as anything, it was maybe a lifestyle thing. I was actually on my way to the Navy and just decided at the last minute to take a different course. And every time I had an opportunity to reconsider that, other things just took precedent. And as I said, I'm glad that things have circled back now, and I get to work with veterans and military families in an area that's, you know, part of my skill set and gift. And hopefully my old man and my grandfather be up there with a big thumbs up.
We are talking about art therapy for veterans here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Julia, when you have veterans come to these events, what kind of response do they have to, you know, to this whole idea of being able to, you know, to share your experience through an art form?
Yeah, I mean, lots of different reactions. We've had veterans who didn't have a particular art that they had created that they wanted to talk about, but they've said Kurt Vonnegut saved my life, because they read, you know, his books, and they felt like the fact that he survived so many things in his life and still could use humor and still convey his experiences and still try to do some good things in the world, you know, they felt like that was helpful for them, or even just to observe the art of others. But then you have, you know, others who will say, you know, as I mentioned, just the sharing the stories, hearing other people's stories and being able to talk about, you know, what other people went through and connect that with your own life. But then I know you had mentioned earlier about the creative process itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's bringing it back to Kurt Vonnegut. that part was so important to him. And I know people like this where, you know, writing specifically, like they have to write. Mm-hmm. They just have to do that, whatever the, you know, particular thing is. Maybe it's playing guitar or something. But Vonnegut, he had to write. That's how he was able to release. And I don't know. I think we are not only with this program, but then we're doing some other things in the future with veterans, you know, writing their own stories and creating their own books through, you know, some work we're planning right now with the Vonnegut Library. I would encourage any veteran who, you know, wants to be more involved to reach out to us at info@vonnegutlibrary.org. I-N-F-O at VonnegutLibrary.org if you have questions about programs, because we're doing a lot of partnering. Actually, I had mentioned, you know, I met Benjamin Patton. We received some really great national attention for our program last year, Art Reach as well as Americans for the Arts out of D.C., recognized us for this and included us in a program at the Walter Reed Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. And that was a wonderful program where the military and the arts groups from all around the country got together and, you know, talked about how beneficial the actual discussion of the brain and what arts does for the brain, and I can't even explain it because I put the C in science, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's where I met Benjamin Patton, and you know, so many other people out in the country who are doing really good work and doing a lot of research on how art and art therapy can affect your brain in a way that allows you to help move forward.
Aaron, since you've made the most, I think, explicit connection here, that you came back and that the cup seemed to be the, you know, the right size to deal with this, that, you know, and you quoted Stalin in terms of really trying to remind us of the humanity of the experience of going to war. What does the work of creating one of those cups do for you? How do you feel when you're doing that work?
Well, I mean, I think it's just that same, I'm not sure exactly. I mean, I think it is kind of a meditation, really. I mean, centering the clay, right? All the words they use for it, you know, having it. I didn't go into it thinking that, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. I wanted to do something that I thought was worthwhile, and making art seemed like a worthwhile expenditure of my time. And then, you know, being able to share the cups with people, you know, and beyond just the veterans community, like a buddy of mine, Drew Cameron, does this thing, Combat Paper, where they shred old uniforms and make paper and do writing workshops and print workshops on it. And there was a really interesting thing where there was a guy who had just been back from Afghanistan and a woman whose father served in World War II, and she had a lot of issues with, you know, now she realizes her father's PTSD, but, you know, so she's like in her 60s and the guy's in his 20s, but they had this weird relationship where she saw her father in this 20-year-old guy, you know, but still had this like loving mothering thing, but also this, you know, so it's good for the families as well, beyond just the veterans, but for them, you know, they can learn from each other. You know, whatever, any kind of community building, I think, is a great thing. And very helpful, but yeah, I mean, it's the community for sure that I, you know, is the cups, you know, making the art is one thing, but when you share it, that's when it really becomes art, I think. That's when it becomes something magic or worthwhile, you know.
What is the response you've gotten when you've given or shared one of your cups that has moved you the most?
Well, I mean, again, I think it's a you know, there was a Vietnam. So there's a woman I met at a show, and she was, you know, kind of bad mouthing her father, and you know, saying that, you know, her parents were divorced, and he lived in the East Coast, and she lived on the West Coast, and he was a Vietnam vet, and we kind of started talking. And I was just talking about my experience and how hard it was, you know, going off to war and coming home to a country that has no idea what you know that it happened even. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, that. And how frustrating that was for me, and that gave her a little insight on to her father. And then I asked if she had pictures that she could give me that I could borrow to make a cup for him. And she did, and she mailed the cup to him, and they started a conversation, you know, 20 years after, you know, or they hadn't talked in a long time, and then whatever, turned out he had cancer, and she went to the East Coast to visit, you know, and it was that, the cup is just a little nothing thing, you know, but it just, but it started that conversation, and that's, you know, that's when it means something to me. Out of the 14,000, maybe there's only a dozen or so that have done that, but whatever. I think it makes up.
Well, yeah, it's a significant moment and altered someone's life. There is part of the, you know, we've been talking about this as art therapy and sort of linking, you know, as if all veterans' experiences in some way are the same, that they're monolith. Is part of what we get out of this too is that they're able to, I don't want to say reclaim, but repronounce or reassert individuality, to say that, you know, my experience was specific, it's mine, and yes, I know I was part of a unit and I was part of a larger enterprise, but I was still an individual. Julia, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and I think that kind of idea is what the Vonnegut Library had in mind when we started, you know, any sort of veterans programming, because we didn't want people to assume that this was the kind of organization that would just say, hey, you know, we're celebrating veterans and all of the things the United States has done in war. And that's not at all what we wanted to do with this program, and that's not at all what Kurt Vonnegut was about. So,
well, yeah, if you read Slaughterhouse-Five, you'll get that pretty quick.
Yeah, right? And one thing about Vonnegut is, you know, as I mentioned, he subtitled Slaughterhouse-Five, The Children's Crusade, and, you know, he thought about, you know, every soldier is some mother's son or daughter, and so those experiences are unique, and it is also wonderful that when you go through that experience, you feel like you're part of a bigger family, but, you know, that bigger family doesn't always include the, you know, the head of the household. It's those you know, conversations and connections you make with the people you meet along the way.
Benjamin, is that part of the point of what you're doing with the films too, is that reassertion of the individual experience?
Well, certainly, and I'm speaking as a civilian and an Army brat, not as a yeah. vet like Aaron or Julia. It certainly is. I think in many ways the same. I mean, first of all, I just want to go back to the point of just Julia saying that Kurt Vonnegut needed to write. Now, I believe that man, it's intrinsic to being a human being, the idea of the need to share our story and be understood and be remembered. We can look at those 30,000-year-old caves of Chauvet in France, where they have those hieroglyphics drawn on the walls of these vast caves that just say, hey, I was here, I mattered, this is my story. I think that's an important piece of this, but also that individual and community element. You know, you can even look at E Pluribus Unum, you know, from many come one. I mean, I think there's an individual experience, but particularly in the area of collaboration on film, you're working with several other people that have had completely different experiences, and yet there's a way that you can still perhaps compromise your vision, let's say on a short film that you're making over several days, and come up with something that perhaps can then reach a broader audience because it speaks to the things that the entire group has gone through. And I think that's fairly significant, and that's something we try to use to our advantage to help build that community that we've been speaking of.
What's the experience in doing these, Benjamin, that has moved you the most or meant the most to you?
Well, I just think to be a fly on the wall at these things where you get to where I guess my main role is to sort of convince them to invest in this idea for a few days of producing a film. And then once they realize that I'm not a therapist trying to tell them how to think or what to think, I'm really more the banks of the river saying, hey, you know, you're uniquely qualified to tell your story and share your story. We're just here to help you do it. Then to sit back and watch this transformation happen, which doesn't happen across the board, but it happens more often than not, where they feel empowered. Wow, hey, I get an opportunity to tell my story, to unpack these things that I've, put away for many, many years in some cases, and reorganize them in a very particular way to communicate something to people, just to sit back and watch that process unfold. And then I think the other thing that is really extraordinary is to hear what people that see the films, perhaps let's say a military spouse, and then talk to her when I come back to that base and say, hey, what did you think of, you know, your husband Bryce's film? And she says, God, I had no idea. And to see that happen, that transformation happen on the faces of the veterans and on the faces of the loved ones that they share their films with is pretty extraordinary to be a part of.
Do you find on a, you know, in doing this that because it is art and they're sharing it with the idea of a film or something that is perceived as work, that they find it easier to share those experiences with you than they would, say, you know, spouses or children or other, you know, people of intimate acquaintance?
That's the case. They might connect to me through by sort of making a shared connection to my family history or my grandfather, particularly older vets. But I think that's just the icebreaker. I think once they're on that path, I think they're deep down, I think they want to share their story and be understood. And I think that I'm sort of the icebreaker. And I will say, though, that coming out of these workshops, we do quantitative assessments, reporting by the participants. And we've seen just over the course of the 4 days that their post-traumatic stress symptoms drop by about 25%. But again, that's just a step. Once they come out of that dark place, we need to keep holding their hand, and as do their family, to continue on that process. But yes.
Julia, I'm going to ask, we're getting a little bit tight on time right now. Could you walk us through what the events are again?
Sure. So there are other events on Saturday related to Vonnegut Fest, including a look-alike contest and a theatrical production and a dinner. But I'll focus on the veterans events. And when I say veterans, that includes families. I don't want anyone to think that it's just for veterans.
You got to drop dad or mom off and then go find someplace else to have dinner by yourself.
Yeah, feel free to bring anybody in the family who might benefit from this. So 12 from noon to 1:30 at the Vonnegut Library, we have Tim O'Brien and Benjamin Patton talking about their lives, their work. And then we move to the Basile Auditorium at the Heron School of Art from 2 to 3:30, where we'll have Steve Inskeep moderating a panel discussion with Tim O'Brien, Benjamin Patton, and several other veterans. If you went last year, we have Hugo Patrocinio back again, Jason Poudrier, and a female war veteran from Camp Atterbury, Olivia Kavisky, who will share her story, fascinating story. So yes, please, I do need to mention it is a Spirit in Place Festival event.
And we got that in. That will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Julia Whitehead, Aaron Toole, and Benjamin Patton. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.